Bob Steck interviewing Bill Pfau, June 7th, 1990. Now, Bill, if we could start, if you would state your full formal name and some of your background, where you were born, where you grew up.
Well, my name is William Cowper Pfau.
How do you spell Cowper?
C-O-W-P-E-R.
Right.
Some of the old English pronounce it Cooper, but my grandfather pronounced it Cowper. That's the way I pronounce it.
And would you spell your last name too?
F-O-W-L-E.
Thank you.
I was born in Chicago, 1910, and educated out there in the local schools. When I came to college in the East, to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Graduated from there in 1932. I had a year at law school, which wasn't successful, and then I went into school teaching. I taught at Governor Dummer Academy in South Byfield, Massachusetts. Then I went back to Williams College and coached the freshman athletic teams and helped with the varsity scouting for 3 years until 1938. When I was married, we came to Lakeville. Tony lived in Williamstown.
Now, who was Tony?
Tony Treadway. I was going to tell you, Tony lived in Williamstown. Her father was L.G. Treadway, who ran the Real New England Inns. And he was a very well-known innkeeper throughout New England, in fact, throughout the eastern United States, because he had some inns in Florida. But that's where I met Tony, in Williamstown, and then we were married in the summer of 1938. The job at Hotchkiss enabled me to get married. I had only $500 at the time. And it gave great promise because we would have a place to live and they would feed us. So it was an excellent opportunity.
Is that what brought you here to Lakeville?
Yes.
With the job? And what year was that?
1938. Mr. George von Sanford came to be a very good friend, and I have the greatest admiration and respect and love for the man because he was really something. He had, we had talked sometime before about school teaching, I would say back in 32, and then he apparently followed my career at school in Williams, and the opportunity came to come down to Hotchkiss to replace Otto F. Monahan, who was the physical director. And I was appointed to the position and served at Hotchkiss for 22 and a half years until until February 1st, 1961. I served in several positions, as a matter of fact. I was physical director for 15 years, coached football, basketball, baseball. They didn't have much basketball at the beginning because Hotchkiss, under Mr. Monahan, had concentrated on hockey and gymnastics. So they didn't really know much about basketball, but we put it in. And we improved the facilities considerably over those years, with a new pool and a new gymnasium, because we really needed those facilities, both the old ones being outdated badly. So I taught American history at Hotchkiss and Bible. I dropped the athletic work and went into the admissions office and became director of admissions. I also was appointed assistant headmaster by Mr. Chapel, Thomas Chapel, who succeeded George von Sanford at Hotchkiss. And I served in that position for 5 years or so. I went from there, from Hotchkiss to Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania. Mercersburg, Pennsylvania. It's in the center of the state, very near the Mason-Dixon line.
Would you spell the name of the academy?
Yeah, the spelling is Mercersburg.
Thank you.
And it's in the town of Mercersburg, Pennsylvania. There I served as headmaster for 11 years, a little over. Went down there in the spring of 61 and left in the summer of 72. We came back here and I was appointed to run the Edward E. Ford Foundation as their executive director. I had served on this foundation for many years because Mr. Ford was a Mercersburg graduate. He asked me to serve on it when we went down to Mercersburg. And so I've been a part of it for years. We grew and needed an executive director, and so I was appointed to that position in 72. And I was executive director until 78, when I finally retired. Well, that's my background, pretty much. As far as the town of Lakeville's concerned, I became part of it right away. We arrived in the summer of 38. That winter, we had a basketball team here in town, and they asked me to come down, and I played with them for several years, until the war, actually. And we had a lot of fun. I don't think there was any particular league or record, but we played everybody, all the towns around, and it was a way of meeting people and becoming part of the town. The Whalen family had four sons, and they all played on the team, and we remember enjoying them. There was Brick. Buck later became postmaster in Lakeville. His son followed him as postmaster later on. Then there was Babe, and the oldest of the bunch was Turk. Turk worked as, he worked in the, it's the waterworks, where it is filtered, where it comes out down there below, where the tracks used to go through. And he was in charge of that. But he was a very good...
Let's see if we can identify that spot where you say where the tracks went through.
Yeah, well, that's where the tracks between Salisbury and Lakeville. It's at the end of Walton Street.
Oh, yes.
And you turn north, if you turn left, you go up there, and it simply filters out the water. I don't know if it's clean enough to drink after it comes out, but it certainly isn't a bad situation. And so Turk worked there for a long time. I used to walk down and see him, chat a bit. At any rate, we had a basketball team. Doc Barr, one of the local dentists, was on it. Names do escape you.
Yeah.
That's one of the things about getting old. Let's see, Ed Markey and Pat Hallahan, and then the Whalens. And there were a few others whose names escaped me. In the summer, Lakeville had a very fine baseball team, probably one of the best for a town team in the region. There was a so-called Tri-State League. That included, I don't know how they got a Massachusetts team in there, but some other they did, but it included mostly New York and Connecticut. Amenia, Dover Plains, Litchfield, Thomaston, Canaan, Lakeville, and Salisbury had a team in those days. There were two teams right here. So Lakeville had a really good team. Rick Whalen was the pitcher, one of the pitchers. Hop Rudd was another. Hop is, of course, a local character. I'll talk about him in a minute. But Brick was the pitcher, and Dick Gurney was the catcher. Dick taught English at Hotchkiss and was an excellent catcher. Played for Brown University and was thought of as a possibility for professional baseball. So was Brick, who had a tryout with the St. Louis Cardinals. The Babe, his brother, played third. Buck played second base. Turk was a substitute pitcher. And the Whalens supported the baseball team as well as the basketball. One of the interesting things about that was that we had a player who came from Torrington. His name was Vic Radzevich. Now, don't ask me to spell that. You just take it as phonetic, Radzevich. And Vic was a very good ball player. He came and played, excuse me, in Lakeville for nothing. Nobody paid him anything. He just came because it was fun. He said he had never been with such a nice bunch of guys, and he had a good time. He didn't care whether he made any money or not. But he could hit the ball, and he used to hit it over the tracks. The old diamond is where the present diamond is, and the outfield is bounded by the mound that was the right of way for the railroad. And if you hit it over that, it was a home run, and Vic used to do that pretty regularly. There was another fellow named Pickard who was a catcher. Pickard was had a tryout, I think, with the New York Giants. He could hit the ball very well, but as a catcher, he wasn't up to Gurney, who was much better. The team had an excellent record. We won the league, it seems to me, most of the time. I guess we lost once in a playoff, as I recall. But I played with them till the war, and into the war, as a matter of fact, until about 1943.
Did you coach the team too?
No,
played with it.
Played.
Right.
The manager of the team was Tom O'Loughlin. Tom O'Loughlin here in town. I think he was connected with the Postal Service and other things. He was a well-known local person, and he was the manager who sort of kept us together and got the schedule going. And we had lots of twilight games too during the summer. I would say we must have played 25, 30 games. So we had a regular schedule, and we were able to come out on top most of the time. Now I put that in because it means that you become part of the town immediately,
right,
which helped me a great deal when the war came. The war came along, and of course there was rationing. Well, in a small town like Lakeville, rationing is one of those things that people either, if you're a good friend, can wink at or help you with certain coupons. So that it meant if we were really hit, Tony and I, although we ate at Hotchkiss most of the time, we were really hit for, say, butter or meat, which were on stamps, we'd find a way to get some stamps locally, so to speak. Also gasoline, it was a help in that way. So another thing I might add while I'm on it, the war came along. It had one fine effect. It helped bring the town of Lakeville closer together. Now, Hotchkiss and Salisbury are private schools, and they obviously are looked upon by the local people as being elitist. And that is true to a degree. And we were trying to break that down. We're always trying to break it down. All headmasters do, or most of them do. And it's by having people on the town baseball team and faculty members, it's a great help. It brings things together. Arthur White, one of the last headmasters at Hotchkiss, did that extremely well. At any rate, the war brought us together in a sense that we had, those of us who didn't get into it until a little later, we had an opportunity to work together on a variety of things. There was health situation. There was a committee on taking care of people who presumably had been wounded or might be wounded. We had people watching airplanes. We had people at a communications center in the firehouse, and you took your turn on that, and you got to know a whole lot of people because you had to call them up and report this and that. And I felt that it had a very positive and beneficial effect on the town. It did for me, and I'm sure for lots of other people. So one thing can be said for the war. Well, that's the baseball and basketball. Oh, I was going to talk about Hop Rudd.
Yes.
Hop Rudd is an extremely interesting character. Hop, I think, grew up here. I don't know his exact background, except that he went to Hotchkiss and was a very well-known athlete there, particularly in hockey and baseball. He played both those sports at Yale. Then he came to back here, and he went to Salisbury School as the coach and athletic director. He coached hockey, baseball. He was well-known throughout the western part of Connecticut, in fact, throughout all New England, because he played all over the place as a baseball player, semi-pro player. And he was a marvelous individual in the sense that he was a completely relaxed, completely honest, candid. There was no guile in Hop. He's just Hop, and he did pretty much as he felt like doing. If he wanted to drive a wretched old car down the street, it didn't bother him a bit. He ran a summer camp. He would fill that car with kids, and they'd go around the town. It was almost a standard sight to see Hop and his kids. He had this camp over in the corner of the lake, the southwest corner, where he had some property. And it was a very fine camp for kids, younger kids, and Hop ran it well.
Co-ed camp?
No, it was just for little boys. Hop was also talented in music. He was a drummer, and Hop, one of the things he would do if you gave him a few beers was to have a jam session, and he'd start with the drums, and pretty soon a saxophone would appear and a clarinet, and you'd have a little group, and they were banging it out in Hop's living room or wherever it happened to be. And he was extremely interested in that and very good at it, and it was well known. So that was fine. Joe, his wife, was the local girl, and she lived through it successfully, and I'm sure it was a fine union, and they had a lot of fun. Now,
just before you leave, Hop, is that a nickname for?
His name was Roswell something or other Rudd. Hop was the nickname, and it was not because he could throw the fastball. It was given to him for some other reason, which he explained once, and I've forgotten. Actually, he was a curveball pitcher. He wrote a column in the Lakefield Journal called Memory Lane. It was terribly humorous. And it was all about old baseball background around town. I mean, stories like the one about Juddy Silvernail over in Millerton. The Millerton baseball team was playing, I don't know whether it was Lakeville or wherever it was, but it doesn't matter. They were playing there in their home field. Right by the home field ran Route 22. They didn't take in enough money at the gate to pay the umpires. So Juddy Silvernail, who lived there in Millerton, said, "Don't worry about that, boys. I'll take care of it." So he went home, got his badge out, which made him a policeman, a deputy, and he went out on Route 22 and he flagged the first big car he saw that was going probably a little bit over the limit, fined them $25, took the fine at that point, returned and said, "Here, pay your umpires." It's true.
Yeah,
it's a true story. A magnificent story. Well, that's the sort of thing Hop had in his memory lane. He had loads of them.
Is he still living?
No, Hop died of cancer about 5 years ago or so. Dick Gurney's dead. Brick Whalen's dead. All the Whalens are gone. There's a big first baseman on the baseball team named Pat Hallahan. He played basketball too. And Pat is still alive. He lives over in Canaan. I think used to work for the power company. Very nice fellow, just the nicest. I haven't seen him for some time, but every now and then our paths cross. Donnie Parsons played on the baseball team. Donnie lives in Lakeville. I don't know. Dick Bacon was on the squad. He came from Hotchkiss too, as a faculty member. So there were three of us. Four counting Jim Cutting, who was another one, came down. Now, let's see, I think that covers the athletic part of it a little bit, although I feel quite confident that the local baseball team was better than the general run of town teams. We had too much talent on it not to be good. Now,
You were, you mentioned that you taught history.
Yes.
And you were also athletic director.
I coached, I was athletic director. They called it physical director in those days. George Van Sanford, the headmaster, had that in mind, and he always emphasized, you are the physical director, not the athletic director. Now, that was his little quirk. It didn't really matter what your title was. You ran the athletics.
No difference.
No difference right. at all. I coached football, and then I coached baseball the first year because they didn't have basketball, but I put it in. I got basketball in pretty quickly. And we played during the war. You see, the war came along in 41, and we had a very small place to play basketball, so we played all our games away. And you couldn't travel during the war except, there were limitations, you couldn't travel except by taxi. You could go round trip 25 miles only. And you had to find another way. You had to, because gasoline was yeah. the basic problem. Although it wasn't as much of a problem as we thought at the time, what they were doing was conserving it for use if they needed it. And so they restricted the public. You could get gas and special coupons, for instance, if your wife was sick in the hospital and you had to go over and see her and back and forth, they'd give you the coupons. They had it. They had the gas, but they were very stingy about letting you get it. Anyway, we went down to Kent to play basketball and, of course, baseball. We went on the train. We went over to Falls Village, picked up the New Haven train there, down to Kent, played our game, and got the up train back home. Which really goes back to times way further back than we were. That'd be back in the teens, before automobiles came along, before you really had a bus. Of course, normally we traveled by bus, but the war stopped all that. So we were able to go to Berkshire School. I think we measured it at 12 and a half miles so that we could make it a round trip of 25. But that was close enough. But we couldn't play all our regular rivals, Taft and Loomis and so on. They're too far away. So we had the restrictions like that. Now, let's see, history. Yes, I taught American history starting in 41. And I was very thrilled to have that opportunity and pleased that George Van Sanford would let me do it. And
were you doing both, or were you?
Oh yes,
coaching?
I did everything.
Yeah.
Same, just added history to the
right.
routine. After the war, I added Bible, and that was the way George Van Sanford worked, because he said one day, I think it was in the summer, close to the opening of school, he said, "You know, John Mulligan, who used to teach Bible here and taught at Salisbury School, has gone somewhere, he's not going to return, and I need somebody to teach Bible." Well, that was his way of saying, "You are elected, you're it." And I said, "Yes, sir." And so I taught the New Testament first, and then we had a course in the Old Testament also. They were minor courses, but they were very important, and I think probably to the students, they weren't so important.
Did you have educational background?
None. So I decided if I was going to teach Bible, I'd better do something. So I spent 3 summers at Columbia, or at Union Theological Seminary, 2 or 3, studying, just so that I'd know something. After all, when he said, I need a teacher, well, I better do something about it. So I went down there to Union Theology, which I enjoyed very much. It was a fascinating experience.
Is Hotchkiss a particular
denomination? No, denominational, non-denominational school, although I would say that it obviously came out of the congregational background rather than the Episcopalian. Salisbury is an Episcopalian school.
Yes.
And So Hotchkiss has none. I don't believe they're going to either. I think the new headmaster only wants to enlarge the chapel so that he can get the whole school in it, and I think he will. He says he will, and so we'll look forward to that. But it so that's the teaching, and I did that. I finally had to drop the history part of it when I went into admissions work because I was just plain too busy. George Millmine, that's a name that's well known in Lakeville.
Yeah.
George lived on the corner of the lake that would be closest to Hotchkiss. His family owned the land up above on the bluff, so to speak, which I think was the ideal place to settle if you had been a pioneer here. I would have picked that place somewhere and said, this is where I want to put my house, and they did. His mother and father were still living when we came, but George was 10 years older than I am, and he was living there. He was married to Molly, and they lived in his parents' house for a bit. Then they built a house right next to it, which is a brick house there just north of it now. The old house is gone. I don't think you can even see where it was today, but it was right at the head of the creek, Sucker Brook, which runs down into the lake. And it's Sucker Brook where the trout come up and spawn, and you can see them coming up there. It's quite interesting. George and Sanford was a real naturalist, and he used to take the kids down and show them things like that. But George lived there, and his family lived at the top, and I'd say I think the Indians must have taken that place. It would be ideal. George was a great help to the town, civic-minded, active, and intelligent, competent in everything he did. He was the man who measured the lake when it froze over and when the ice went out in the spring. And he would record that and would appear in the journal, and that was his job. That's held among others. He was also a very important person on the finance committee of the town. He helped run the town's finances for years. George was a fine person, just great. Let's see. Now, George took me into the admissions office and then turned it over to me so that I had the admissions for about 5 or 6 years and enjoyed that very much. It keeps you very busy, and the public certainly take advantage of you in every respect. What you have to do, you learn how to deal with the public, because they'll call you up and want to see the school in the dark of night simply because they're on the way. And we're going to see Deerfield tomorrow. We'd like to see you now. It's 5:30 and getting dark, but we'd like to see Hotchkiss. So they use you, and you have to learn how to handle them, I think. It's an important, good thing to know. And I enjoyed the work with the admissions. And
approximately how many students did you have at that time?
Well, the old joke, Bob, is when they asked the president of the college how many students he said 1 in 100. We had 350. Well, we had, counting day students, maybe 360 or so. And so we used to, we didn't increase the number. We just simply ran along. There were about 90 graduated each year, and perhaps 110 were in the upper middle class, that's the 11th grade, and 100 in the 10th grade, and the 9th grade was small.
Where did most of the students come from, and what kind of ethnic background were they?
There's no pattern on the background of Hotchkiss students, certainly. They, in the sense of ethnic background, the people that came to Hotchkiss over the years were among the upper class, if you could put it that way. It's a dreadful thing to say, but these people were wealthy, many of them, and were important in business and professions and in the world in general. It turned out some excellent people, but to counter that, we increased the scholarships. We worked hard to get, we had 6 local scholarships which would let a boy come for nothing, really, to Hotchkiss. He'd have to earn it, and he'd have to win it, so to speak. It was competitive. But that was to help bring us together with the town. He had to live in Lakeville. Also, the scholarships tended to leaven the thing, and it was good. But I would, if you look at the graduates of Hotchkiss, and I compare them with, say, another school, I'd say Hotchkiss people are very able, very capable. They do well in life, but they have a head start. They have a head start.
I recently read some biographies that they have at Hotchkiss, like, and I was surprised at what had happened to some of the people. For instance, Frederick Field and Ingersoll, the editor of PM. So that, and I suppose there must have been others who went into business field, might have reached the top.
Oh, Henry Ford, all the Fords.
Henry Ford.
Starting with the Edsel, Henry's top, old Henry, the original Henry, Edsel's son, his son. Edsel's three boys, Henry, Benson, and Billy, all came to Hotchkiss. And they, let's see, Henry graduated in 38, I think, just before we arrived. Oh, no, Benson, Henry and Benson had graduated by 38. Billy came in and around 39 or 40. And they all went into the Ford Motor Company, of course, and were, I think Henry was president of it for a long time. Oh yes, there are lots of them that went into businesses that became well known. I should know more just offhand, but I can't think of them.
Can you think of any who went into other fields?
Well, Potter Stewart, Supreme Court Justice, graduate.
Was that Hotchkiss?
Bork, who was nominated for the Supreme Court and didn't make it, Hotchkiss graduate. Let's see here. There are several famous, or well-known, I should say, physicians. Many of them went into that, and of course, the law attracted a great many. New York firms just dotted with Hotchkiss people. People like Bill McKnight, Jim Lennon, who was famous for Time Life.
Oh yes.
Hotchkiss graduate. So their graduates have done extremely well, and they're able people. As I say, they had a head start in the sense that their fathers before them were well entrenched.
Was Hotchkiss always co-ed, or?
No.
No, when did it?
Hotchkiss was all boys from 1893 when they started, I think. Their centennial's coming up. All boys until 1970, the late 1970s. And then the girls came. I can't remember the exact year. The girls were introduced, but they did it very well. They planned ahead, and well, they simply added. They did not, excuse me, cut out any boys.
They increased the population.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Increased the population, which presented some problems, because the chapel won't hold them all now. The dining room has been changed into a cafeteria. They built a new auditorium, which will hold the whole school. But it meant adding facilities that they didn't have, or expanding facilities that they did have. And that's been one of the problems. But it has been co-ed, and I'd say successfully so. Very successfully.
I'm just going to close that.
All right.
Okay.
Hotchkiss School under George Van Sanford was a very intellectual place. That was his way of approaching life. And he ran the school as a school that was disciplined, active, curious, busy. He himself would take the boys out into the woods, those who were not athletic, few of them, and they would trim and care for the woods around the school. cutting down dead trees, taking them out, and planting, moving things. He was always into that, so that the boys felt he was close to them. They felt he was a real person, in the sense of a boy growing up, you know, see the adults, you wonder about them. At any rate, that's the kind of person he was. And he was on the Yale board, they called them overseers or trustees or whatever, and very influential down there. When he got to, he was a Democrat by political connection. When he retired, he went up to live in Bennington, Vermont, where he had a home, which was an ancestral home, and he ran for the legislature. And he was elected to the legislature and eventually to the state senate. And he was, of course, a linguist, so that he appealed to the French section of Bennington by writing his appeals in French and speaking to them in French. He was easily elected, although he hadn't lived there actually for some time. He lived down in Lake. But the farm was his, and of course the people there knew him and knew the background of the family. So he was, and he was highly praised for his work in the Vermont legislature, where they needed someone like that. And the people who were elected to the legislature up there recognized in him immediately. Here is a man we can count on. Here is a man who knows things. Here is a man who will lead us, in a sense. And he received all kinds of compliments when he finally retired. He was great help to them, as he would be. At any rate, George and Sanford and Hotchkiss School were well known throughout the country. When you asked about patterns of people coming there, we had certain areas throughout the United States, which once you have drawn a boy or two, he's successful, he goes back home and starts to build a little group who are interested in Hotchkiss, gets another family, and so on. So it built up that way. So that there were, all over the country, we'd have places like that, and some stronger than others. We were always anxious to get somebody from areas that normally we didn't. We didn't have any people from Montana or Idaho and things like that. But when I was in the admissions office, I made a point of getting a Navajo Indian. And that was, I don't know how successful it was.
How did you do that?
Tony and I drove out through the West and stopped in near Gallup, New Mexico. Went across into Arizona to Window Rock, that area, and stopped at an Episcopal mission, a man named Father Given. And we talked to him about it, and Robert Hawkins, who is still here, he's retired from Hotchkiss, was on the faculty at the time. And Hawkins had contact with Father Given and other people out there. So we began and we worked on it, and we got them somebody to get us a boy. It was a difficult thing because, of course, as you know, your Indian knowledge, that he was tainted the minute he left the Hogan in Window Rock or wherever he lived and came here with all these people. It was he had to be cleansed. They had all kinds of ceremonies to get him back in the proper shape. But it was an experiment, and I left Hotchkiss. He graduated about the time I left, so that I don't know what happened.
So that he did become integrated into the school?
He did. It took a year to do anything, and he was there 2 years. And I had a problem with the faculty, too, because some faculty understood it and others didn't like it.
Or not so much.
Well, here was a fellow in class who couldn't speak, really. He could speak a little English, but he couldn't recite. He couldn't enter in, and some of them are just that narrow-minded. I said, my gosh, here we are. I had four of his teachers. Two of them were great, and two of them were punks.
Did it lead to others coming?
That's what I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not sure. But they now are, I know that the present headmaster would love it, but they've gone, I think they went further afield, Thailand and the Orient, all sorts of things. to get diversity.
Would you say, Bill, that there's a Hotchkiss personality? Would that be a possibility, or too diverse for?
I don't know of anything that anyone I would call a Hotchkiss personality. It's diverse, and of course you find exceptions all over there, all along the line. So I don't think I could just pin it down that way. Hotchkiss has done a lot. I think they've done a lot for the town too, really, although the town naturally feels a little bit hostile. Hotchkiss had tennis courts, and they let people play, or else they rented them, and then the question was, well, why does the town have to pay taxes on their tennis courts and you don't have to pay them on yours, and you can still make money on them? Hotchkiss now does it, I think, by, for instance, letting all the town youngsters skate in that hockey rink. During Christmas vacation, it's the busiest place you ever saw. Every little child who has a pair of skates is up there skating on some team, peewee, squirts, or whatever you want to call them. And they had, it's a nice thing to do. They've been very good in that way. They help. And of course, they've given a lot of employment to the town, too.
Good morning.
So that Hotchkiss then, we might say, had an active program to try to develop community relations.
Yes,
they did
indeed.
It through
yes,
opening
indeed.
Their facilities.
Yeah. Yes.
And you indicated your own involvement, for instance, with the baseball team.
Yeah.
Was there much of an involvement in terms of faculty, let us say, in town hall meetings and things like
some.
That?
Some. Yes, indeed. Some. And I'm sure the faculty did some things, give a book report or whatever, a lecture or something like that. So, yes, but it wasn't as large as we wanted.
I recall that there were such things when we first came here as movies were shown there in the town.
Yeah.
Were there any other such activities, let us say, for the adults at Hotchkiss?
There were certain activities of lectures, musicals, and school theatricals the town people were invited to.
Right.
It wasn't until they got this nice new auditorium. If you'd could have seen the old auditorium, you'd know why they didn't invite many people, because it didn't hold many people. It was too small, and the stage was dreadful. The place to dress for the actors was awful.
Was there any interplay with Housatonic? You mentioned interplay with other private schools.
Housatonic Valley Regional High School started the first regional high school, I think, in the country, certainly New England. Started about 37, 38, somewhere in there. Somewhere in there. And that, we did compete with them when the war was on, because there was fine competition. But normally we didn't after the war, because we had enough outside, and they didn't particularly want it. They used us as we used them when we were close together. There's good competition, but it could, I don't know whether it's hard sometimes to play the local high school. You get yourself into quite a broil if you're not careful.
But was there any interchange in terms of faculty?
No, not much. Not that I know of.
No.
I don't recall any at that time. They were just beginning, and I think they felt, you know, here's Hotchkiss established as a private school, and that line between the private and the public was sharp, and they didn't want to bring it together. Although in time, of course, it has, and Hotchkiss teachers have taught there in summer school and things like that. But it's always there. There will always be a feeling between the boarding school, the privileged, and those who aren't. And you can't escape it. I mean, there it is, and it'll pop up somewhere along the line. And then if you get into athletics and have any kind of a brouhaha or trouble or fight over a decision, it gets to be nasty. It isn't good, because it brings out the hatred and the jealousy and the feelings, you know, and then kids that age will hurl around insults of one sort and another. Just awful.
Yeah, that certainly does happen.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to refer back to, when you were teaching, what were the earnings like? What were the satisfactions? What were the negative things in terms of teaching at Hotchkiss?
Teaching at Hotchkiss was all positive. First of all, your classes were small compared to the public schools. You had no problem with discipline. You could teach all the time. You didn't have to bother with things of that sort.
What was the size of a class?
My history classes ran 12, 13, 14.
Great.
I consider anything below 10 not a class. It's almost a big tutoring group. Mm-hmm. You need an interchange, an interplay among the students to keep the thing going. And if it's too small, you won't get that. But I had in my Bible classes, I got up into the 20s, maybe 22 with the lower middle Bible because of scheduling. And as I said, it was a minor course, and people looked upon it in that respect as a minor course. And so the scheduler